With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And we're back, ladies and gentlemen, on the Philippe Matthews Radio Show. Thank you for tuning in wherever you are tuning in from around the world. I've got a special guest with me today. Dr. Jacqueline Battaglore is the author of Birth of a White Nation, The Invention of White People and Its Relevance Today, a fascinating book on race in America that begins with an exploration of the moment in time when white people as a separate and distinct group of humanity were invented through legislation and the enactment of laws. Dr. Battaglore is an anti-racist writer. She's an attorney and professor of sociology and anthropology and criminal justice at St. Xavier University in Chicago, my hometown. How are you, Doc?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Fantastic. All right, let's get started here. This was absolutely fascinating. I first came to know you, obviously, from that YouTube video that you had up where you were lecturing. And, you know, I think the first thing out of your mouth was is that white people were invented as of 1681. Oh, my God. Well, you know, not too many people had ever heard of that, particularly from a white woman. So you have to break this down for us. What caused you to do this level of research? And then let's get into where did white people come from and how were they invented?
Sure. Well, when I was doing graduate research, I was in the law library, and I was not focusing on this area at all. I was actually exploring legal restrictions on marriage. Mm-hmm. And so I was in the law library, and I was looking at various restrictions in law, and I was going back and back and back in time. And at some point, I found myself in the 1600s looking at colonial Virginia legal enactments. Mm-hmm. And something strange, I knew something strange was happening, but I couldn't quite put my finger on it. And then I, you know, went to bed that night after a long day of research, and I woke up and I had this very clear awareness of what the strange thing was. Mm. And what it was is that this category for humanity that I am intimately familiar with, it's on my birth certificate from the moment I was born, and, you know, have been imposed on me, self-imposed and otherwise, throughout my whole life, and that is the human category white. And it had vanished in these legal enactments at some point, but I couldn't do anything with it at that particular moment because I had to stay focused on my dissertation project and get that completed. Mm-hmm. But I had a chance to pursue this discovery through a sabbatical that I received through my employer at St. Xavier University. And so the book, Birth of a White Nation, is the fruit of that research. I discovered that, that white people as this category white itself doesn't appear in law until a very specific date, specifically 1681. Mm. And that's very curious, right? Lawmakers don't just go coming up with new terms to lump groups of people within unless there's a purpose, there's a reason for it. And so the work of Theodore Allen and Edmund Morgan and other historians, those two are, their work is perhaps the most prominent, was really important for linking the invention of this new category called white people with Bacon's Rebellion and the threat that it posed to the ruling elite in colonial Virginia. And so, you know, that's the story. It was by accident, I think, some of the best discoveries in history and science and otherwise can all
absolutely
be quite by accident.
So, okay, so we now know that white people were invented as a race of humanity in 1681. The next logical question would be, why?
Sure. Well, before we even get to the why, the part of the story that I know when I discovered, it was completely new information to me. And as I lecture around the country about this particular historical and legal information, it doesn't matter what group I'm speaking to, whether they are PhDs, whether they are lawyers, whether they're undergraduate students or K through 12 teachers, it really doesn't matter. Everyone consistently is absolutely shocked to realize that prior to the last quarter of the 1600s in the British North American colonies, free persons of African descent and persons of British descent who were free of indenture, these groups shared the same rights and responsibilities as a matter of law. And so to just concretize that, what did that mean? That meant a man of African descent who was free could vote, and they did. He could own an enslaved person or an indentured servant, and they did. They could run for public office, although I couldn't find anything in the record of a person of African descent who did that, but I know that legally they could. And so to realize that there actually is a moment that we can turn to in pre-U.S. history, but on the land that is now called the United States, there was an example of persons of African descent and largely British, although there were other Europeans as well, of living together in relative equality. And again, you know, I can offer some nuances to that. You have to look at people who stood at the same class standing. And so I should be very clear that the ruling elite were British and had light skin. And so they were an exclusive group in that regard. But the other variations of class that fell below there, it didn't matter whether you were your origins were British or African. And there's one other important caveat to that, and that is that persons of African descent could be purchased as enslaved people. They couldn't be made slaves by virtue of British law, but they could be purchased already enslaved, which was sort of a legal trickery of British law at the time. And persons of British descent were prohibited by British law from being enslaved. So they came to work under terms of indenture. So that's pretty significant. I don't want to create a, you know, all was happiness and everything was equal, because that's
right.
Not the full picture. But in terms of class standing and being free of enslavement or indenture, that location within colonial society was quite equitable.
So what did you, as you accidentally uncovered this hidden history, if you will, how did it affect you personally as a person who is or has been for all of your life identified as that very label and category?
Well, sure. As you can imagine, it completely rocked my world. I remember feeling some even seemingly contradictory things. I felt just devastated to learn that this label that has been attached to me and I have felt an attachment to for my whole life was such a destructive, harmful force. I felt free now that I understood. I had a tremendous sense of freedom in my thoughts and even in my sense of self. And I remember being angry because it seemed as if I had been denied this knowledge, as if somebody before us had it and then kept it from us. I don't think that's a very accurate portrayal at this point, but I did feel that way on the front end. And so, you know, I just finished, I'm working on this new book. I think I've shared that with you, and I think it will be called How White Are You, but I'm not sure yet. and I just was writing about the reflecting on this moment and my own struggles with my own identity and how this new knowledge has absolutely transformed me, really down to my core. And my goodness, it has directed the sole focus of my professional work has been directed in further exploring the meanings of this discovery, making links between history and the present, how this creation of this group of humanity called white people and its it being imbued from its very founding with the presumption of white superiority, to think about and consider how that continues to shape institutions, structures, relationships today. So I've never looked back in many ways.
Wow. How long have you been doing, how long from the time that you discovered this to now, how many years are we talking about?
I think I would say 2012.
Okay. All right. So in the book, you talk about a pivotal moment that you know, one would say, well, what was the reason that they decided to do this? Because, things weren't great, but things weren't that bad. But it was because of Bacon's Rebellion, which there's a lot of misnomers surrounded by Bacon's Rebellion. And, of course, what you have brought out is never mentioned. But talk to us about the significance of Bacon's Rebellion and how that rocked what was, I guess, considered back then the 1% to create these laws.
Sure. Well, the thing to note about Bacon's Rebellion is it was enormous and lengthy. I mean, when we think of a rebellion, you think maybe a week or two, perhaps a month. Bacon's Rebellion lasted.
The country. It literally rocked the entire,
literally. The colony of Virginia, I mean, it was a corporation. The corporation was rocked. The rebellion lasted well over a year. It was led by Nathaniel Bacon, and he actually was relatively elite, but he was really disgusted with the lack of a violent response on the part of the other ruling elite men of British descent in Virginia at the time, and he wanted to attack the surrounding friendly tribal people, and he was really angry that they wouldn't agree to do that. So Bacon's Rebellion, it's very complicated. I don't want to present it as simple. I focus on one part of it because for purposes of the invention of white people, it's very much central, but we can't forget that the first phase of Bacon's Rebellion was really targeted against tribal peoples and was very much a slaughter of them. And so phase two of Bacon's Rebellion was focused on the ruling elite. Just prior to Bacon's Rebellion, things were getting, there were significant changes going on.
Mm-hmm.
They included things like the price of tobacco had dropped, the taxes on tobacco had increased, the king gave much of the farmable land to his friends, and so there wasn't a lot, even if you were fortunate enough to survive your term of indenture or the period during which you were enslaved on large landholding and then were freed.
Mm-hmm.
People who then were released from servitude were finding it much more difficult to make it, to make a life of their own. It was becoming far more strict. The numbers of poor people in England who were sent over to work suddenly began to narrow significantly, and the continual need for a new labor supply, it persisted. And so they were completely panicked about where their labor force was going to come from. And so they began to turn more significantly at this time to stolen boys, girls, mothers, fathers, men and women stolen from Africa and rendered slaves in transport between Africa and North America. So we began to see an increase in that. And so the British who were here in colonial North America, they found because the large landholders were really panicked about having enough laborers for the next to plant the seeds and harvest the tobacco, they imposed really harsh punishments for relatively minor infractions. So like stealing a hog could add 5 years to your term of work.
Mm-hmm.
And so conditions were really difficult, and people were finding it that there are opportunities to make it on their own after having completed their agreements for work. Their opportunities dramatically narrowed. So Nathaniel Bacon didn't have to look very hard to find disgruntled people in the colony.
Mm-hmm.
And that shows by virtue of the fact that, the forces who were part of the rebellion included people of African descent and European descent. And the vast majority of the people in the colony, it should be noted, were poor British men.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they were really angry that their chances to make it were declining and narrowing. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, a very small group of people in the colony were doing quite well. And of course, we in 2017 know this all too well, that the 1% are doing exceptionally well, even at times where the masses are doing much worse.
Wow. Absolutely. Okay, so that helps connect more of the dots. So basically, as a result of these laws in 1681, they call always mispronounce the word anti-miscegenation. That's a big word. Most people have not heard of it unless they have dealt with trying to marry outside of their race during a certain time and period. Speak to us about anti-miscegenation and what it means, why is it relevant, and how is it affecting us and these laws today?
So the significance of anti-miscegenation laws, let me first just define generally what they are. Anti-miscegenation law is a body of law that involved placing restrictions on marriage. Specifically, they were laws that prohibited white people from marrying various non-white people. Every mm-hmm. single anti-miscegenation law that was ever passed in the United States was passed by virtue of state law, and every one of them prohibited a white person from marrying a person of African descent. Sometimes they had, like in California, there was a whole laundry list of people seen as non-white that white people were prohibited from marrying. So after the large numbers of Chinese came after the discovery of gold in 1848, they were added to the list. White people could not marry Chinese people. Then when Japanese began to come after the Chinese Exclusion Act was passed, then they simply changed the wording to mongrel, which was meant to capture everybody who would fall into the group today called Asians.
Mm-hmm.
And they prohibited marriage with Pacific Islander, a person of African descent, as well as Native Americans.
Wow.
So this body of law, it's often described, I always try to make, I'm very intentional about articulating this particular point, because so often I read in history books a description of anti-miscegenation law as laws that made interracial marriage illegal, and I really don't like that. It's a very problematic description because it whitewashes it. It makes it seem as though, oh, we were all prohibited from marrying outside of a race, but that simply
mm-hmm.
isn't true.
Mm-hmm.
Anti-miscegenation law was solely concerned with white people and prohibited them from marrying various groups, always prohibited them from marrying persons of African descent. So that's generally what anti-miscegenation law is. The law of the first appearance of a group of humanity labeled white people, we actually find it in a law that was the first anti-miscegenation law.
Mm-hmm.
So what it did was we have to all, it's also important for us to know that in colonial Virginia and Maryland, there was a dramatic gender imbalance, roughly 10 to 12 men for every woman.
Mm.
So it helps us to make sense of a law that was passed in 1664 in Maryland, actually, that punished, and here's the language we want to pay attention to. So the language of the law in 1664 punished British and other freeborn women who married enslaved Negro men. So that's the mm-hmm. language of the law.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And we know that plenty of mostly British women did marry men of African descent.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon me. And so that gender imbalance may help us understand why this was such an offense. And the language of that law of 1664 is really important because it was the law of 1664, excuse me, it was actually an amendment to the law of 1664 that took place in 1681 and reflects the first use of white to reflect a group of humanity. So that law said British and other white women are prohibited from marrying enslaved Negro men. So that's where we see the first assertion of whiteness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's significant for a number of reasons. We know that what this body of law called anti-miscegenation law did was it worked to centralize patriarchal power squarely mm-hmm. among and within white men.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well,
and
wow.
So that,
wow, that's crazy. The egos of the 1%. You know, it's kind of like well, obviously, for the African American that's being called now, it has been an unprecedented journey through what we have gone through here in America. But yeah. All of the races, or not, and there's no such thing as races, but all of humanity literally has been duped and continues to this day to be in a very insidious way benefiting from these laws that were created before, if I'm understanding, before the Constitution, before the first meeting of Congress.
True, that's true. Yes, they were invented long before, almost 100 years.
Yeah.
Actually, a little over 100 years.
Yeah, yeah. And so one would think, you know, if tomorrow, it were, you know, I don't know what today is, but let's say, you know, today, you know, it's just, you know, business as usual, day as usual. Tomorrow, all of a sudden, there's going to be this new designation of race. So let's say like the transgendered community are going to be the new bottom that was created for as it was created in 1681, where we became the new bottom. And so literally in a 24-hour period of time, you know, all transgender people can't vote, they can't own guns, they can't sue, they have no rights whatsoever, and bam. I mean, that's what happened.
Right.
That's
right. Well,
what happened. That's crazy.
It's absolutely crazy. So let me fill in the parts of the story now.
And I'm not picking on
history that you're alluding to.
Just using that as an example of how, you know,
crazy
it sounds.
That
yeah,
is.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. But how real it can be, especially with the people that we have in office today.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it had to be, I mean, if we could all imagine Congress coming up with an entirely new label for a majority group, a numerical majority.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that would be it would be crazy.
Right.
And we would all, and those who are in the group or not in the group would all be asking, well, who's in and who's out and how do you know? And what does it mean
mm-hmm.
to be in that group?
Mm-hmm.
And so those kinds of questions were answered very quickly with the invention of white people. And let me, I thought of another important historical piece that I haven't folded in yet. So let me do that really quickly. Theodore Allen, in his research, he really dove into letters written between the ruling elite in Virginia and the legal oversight authority in London. And it is in these communications where it is revealed how completely panicked the folks in London, who they're corporate shareholders, right? Virginia's a corporation. They're the shareholders. They're completely feeling threatened in their investment. And the ruling elite in Virginia communicate to them saying, look, don't worry about Bacon's Rebellion. We are going to – we have a plan to ensure that this will never happen again. And they reveal that their plan is – to take a divide-and-conquer approach. So that's a really significant piece of information. So the next thing that we see happening as a matter of legal enactments is this assertion of this new group of humanity called white people through a whole body of laws, a whole bunch of laws that worked to assert that new group called white people and gave it meaning. And what they ended up doing through these laws, and I'll review, you've already mentioned a few of them, but I'll review them again. What they do is they give meaning to white, and it also, these laws work to completely, fundamentally restructure colonial society. And so let's look at some of these laws. One of the first laws required that indentured servants be paid a certain amount of goods, including gun and powder, upon completion of their term of service. And in contrast, another law prohibited free persons of African descent from being in possession of gun and powder. So I just want people to soak that in for a second, because that's the implications of that are really huge.
Think about what it is when they thought about like Obama was going to take away their guns. Just imagine, you know, that the level of panic that ensued in whites when they, which was never the case, but just the thought or the talk of it was just, you know, insane. So imagine that it's now a legal law.
And think of the context. I mean, this is rough terrain. This is really a, you know, it's not like living in the suburbs in your house, you know. This is really rough wilderness, you know, largely. So a very different context. So another law that was passed that worked to give meaning to this group called white people and to reshape the meanings assigned to persons of African descent was a law that made it illegal for a person of African descent to testify against a white person. So from a context where free British and free Africans have the same privileges and opportunities as a matter of law, that's shattered. That will never be the same with this new body of law.
Wow.
Because that law in and of itself, and of course there was a whole slew of laws, but even if we just look at that one, it virtually ensures that persons of African descent are going to be in a subservient position to the most depraved white person. Because the law imposes it.
Wow.
And so we have this series of laws that worked to ultimately to create a new bottom to colonial society, and it shoved persons of African descent and members of native tribes in that new bottom. And the previous bottom of society that existed is now one that only white people hold. And so you see that the ruling elite, they didn't hand over a penny in restructuring society and shoring up their position and their access to resources. They didn't have to spend a penny to ensure Bacon's Rebellion would happen again. wouldn't happen again, excuse me. What they did was they created a new bottom to society. They shoved persons of African descent and made native tribes in there, and they threw this invention of a new group of people called white people, and sharing that label with them, they worked to create a connection between the ruling elite and the masses of laborers now called white people.
Wow.
And that connection is one of white superiority, the presumption of their superiority over all those other people.
Unbelievable.
See, people, when I lecture, people have no trouble understanding this, the new social reality post-Bacon's Rebellion. People never have questions about it. We all get it, and there's a reason we get it, because we're still living it.
Yeah,
the footprint is with us.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like, you know, what you're saying, it's almost like it's in real time. It's like it hasn't been, you know, 500 years or, you know, 600 years. Absolutely amazing. So, you know, if we have a little bit more time, talk to us about what does it mean to, once you are exposed to this information, what does it mean to be white?
Well, absolutely. It makes it clear that what it means to be white is that whiteness was something done to all of us, and that it, you can't separate that category white from its assertion of superiority. You simply can't. Its invention was imbued with the presumption of its superiority, and so it sheds a whole, at least for me, it was an entirely new twist on understanding whiteness and being white. And there was nothing, you know, it's hard to, some people want to find some positive something about whiteness. And I think that's truly wrongheaded. Now, have some white people done some good things? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Are there some people with white skin who have contributed ideals and ways of being that we might want to emulate? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But in terms of whiteness as something to draw upon, I think that is misses the essence of what this invented category is and what
no
it
no way
did.
To clean it up no and way to right, yeah. No,
you would be making a new white. It wouldn't be drawing on something from the past.
Right.
Does that make sense? You would have to be reconstructing an entirely new. But people often think restoring something from a past, and that doesn't, that sort of redemptive restoration doesn't.
I think that's
pretty
powerful too,
exist.
That you really can't undo whiteness going back in the past and trying to heal it or correct it. It's not possible.
No, because it's very inventive. From the moment of its invention, it has been to divide and conquer. It has been about power and suppression.
So literally, I remember you saying those are the, you know, I think I asked you in a previous interview, what was the reason for white people to be invented? What is their purpose? And you said white people exist for only two reasons, and that was it: to divide
That's
and conquer,
right.
And to protect the 1%.
That's exactly right.
Wow. Dr. Jacqueline Battalore, ladies and gentlemen, she's the author of Birth of a White Nation. Obviously on Amazon, go get it, and you will not be able to put it down. So make sure when you get it that you have some time, because it's a page turner. And here's the rub: it ain't fiction; it's actually true, actual law. So it might read or feel like fiction. And say, oh, I can't, this can't be, but it is absolutely one of the best history books that I have read, and I've read quite a few. That's the other thing that we'll do when we have you come back on and talk about, you know, where is this being taught and why isn't this being taught to our children? We just, you know, we're not doing the Columbus thing anymore. Why are we not teaching and telling people really the foundational cause and structure of America?
Happy to do so.
I appreciate you. All right, Doc. Take care, everybody. We'll see you guys. Well, we won't see you because this is the radio show. But we'll hear from you soon on the Philippe Matthews Show radio show. Take care, everybody. Take care, Doc.
Thank you so much.
All righty. Bye-bye.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.